as in the past. Welcome to new people. Welcome to Rabbi Leibowitz joining us again, yet again, in another semester of Asicha seminars. We very, very much appreciate, no matter how many times it happens, it doesn't grow old. We appreciate Rabbi Leibowitz supporting the program from its inception, joining us and teaching us Torah, giving us advice on the side, and being a helpful player always in the learning that goes on here. Tonight's shiur is sponsored in memory of Rachel Rabinovich's grandmother, Maita Bas Yechiel, on her 18th yard site, and in gratitude to Rabbi Leibowitz. So I'm going to jump, even though I didn't pay any money, I'm going to jump on the gratitude train over there and thank Rabbi Leibowitz for joining us here. And like I said, always helping me out and always helping us out and always sharing Divrei Torah with all of us. If you're willing to enable and your setting allows for it, you should please put on your video. It'll help you focus. It'll help Rabbi Leibowitz feel like he's giving shiur to real people. Without further ado, we ask Rabbi Leibowitz to share Divrei Torah with us.
Okay, thank you so much, Rabbi Steinmetz. It's always a pleasure to be with you, and I'm very, very happy to be able to share some Divrei Torah with such an illustrious group of women. It's so nice to see so many people that I know from a variety of different places, and let's get right to it. Rabbi Steinmetz asked that the topic of tonight's shiur be about children waiting between eating fleishigs and eating milchigs. That apparently you've been learning a little bit about Hilchus Kashrus, and therefore it's appropriate to discuss one of the more common questions that comes up in Hilchus Kashrus. Many years ago, I wrote an article for the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society, the newly rejuvenated Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society. It was out for a little bit, but it's back now. The article was about kashrus for children. It was when my children were very young, and I started to think about these issues. And of all of the issues that we could talk about when it comes to kashrus for children, there is none that is more commonly asked about than how long a child has to wait before he can have the ice cream cone, before he can have the milk chocolate. That's always something that seems to be very pressing. The child needs to eat, wants to have that delicious food, and yet he just had chicken because that's the only thing he agrees to eat for dinner. So now let's talk a little bit about the idea of waiting between milchigs and fleishigs in general, which I'm sure you've spoken about already, but maybe just to give a quick recap, and then the application to children. So let's start with the basics. The Isser Midah Oraisa of having meat and milk together only applies to meat and milk that was actually cooked together. The Gemara Chulin Daf Kuf Ches derives this from Pasuk Lo Savash Al Gedi B'Chalev Imo Derech Bishul Asra Torah. The Torah only asks for something that was actually cooked together. When it was milk and meat, cooked together. If a person eats meat and then drinks milk in the same meal, that is not a Torah prohibition. That certainly is a rabbinic prohibition, but it is not a Torah prohibition. So the Rabbanan, taking the cue from the Torah, then expanded this prohibition in two ways. First of all, the Rabbanan determined that a person is not even allowed to eat meat and milk together, even though they were not cooked together. So if you were to take a cold piece of cheese and put it on your cold hamburger and have a cold cheeseburger, that would be an Isser Midrabbanan, not an Isser Da'oraisa. This is Paskind in Shulchan Aruch, in Yardeas, in Pei Zayin, Si'if Aleph. And then the Rabbanan said, not only are you not allowed to eat cold meat and cold milk together, you're not even allowed to eat meat and milk consecutively, one right after the other, unless one has some waiting period in between. Now, some waiting period is very non-specific. What exactly does that mean? The Gemara never tells us. It never tells us how long a person has to eat between eating meat and eating dairy. It's one of those surprising things that it's like every child knows how long they wait between fleishigs and milchigs. They could tell you right away what their practice is, but it does not appear in any Gemara that tells us exactly how long one is supposed to wait between eating fleishigs and eating milchigs. The only clue we have in the Gemara is a statement made by Mar Ukva, where Mar Ukva says he's lamenting his own religious shortcomings, where he says that, you know, my father was so religious that if he would eat meat one day, he would not eat milk until the next day. He would not eat dairy until the next day. Whereas I am kechala bar chamra. I am like vinegar, the son of wine. Vinegar is spoiled wine. I am like vinegar, the son of wine, in the sense that I only wait from one meal to the next. I don't wait until the next day. So what does that mean for us? Are we supposed to be like Marukva? Are we supposed to be like Marukva's father? You know, the Balei Musar raised the question. The Balei Musar asked, well, what's he lamenting? How about this? I have an idea, Marukva. If you're so upset that you're not like your father, that he waits 24 hours, why don't you just wait 24 hours? And then you'll be more like your father. And that would solve the problem. So the Balei Musar point out, I think Rav Sternbach has this in his Sefer and Chumash, that no, you can't just wait 24 hours, because that would be an inappropriate chumrah for who he was at that time. That a person has to, it's okay to take upon oneself chumras, but they have to be appropriate for who you are. They have to be appropriate for your station in life. It's not always appropriate to have a chumrah. I remember one of my friends telling me that he had a parent-teacher conference. He was a friend of mine who was a Rebbe in a high school, and a parent came in and told him, he said, Rabbi, before you say anything else, I just want you to know something about me. I keep a bag packed for Mashiach. I keep a bag packed under my bed in case Mashiach comes, I'm ready to go. And the high school Rebbe was thinking to himself, that is wildly inappropriate for someone at your madrega, meaning considering everything else I happen to already know about you, that doesn't seem like an appropriate chumrah for where you are in life. A person has to have appropriate chumras. So Marukva knew that for where he was, for who he was, that chumrah would not make sense. Sometimes as Talmidim of our great Rebbe, Rav Shechter Shlita, people assume that we all keep all the chumras that Rav Shechter keeps. That's impossible. It would be first of all, we don't even know half the chumras that Rav Shechter keeps. He does it so with such tznius. He does it in such a way where we can never even, we're only still picking up on things here and there as we look very closely. But even if we did know, even those that we do know about, it's appropriate for someone of his madrega, but not always appropriate for people of different madrega. In fact, I realize I'm a little off topic here, but that's one of the messages when Rav Shechter is asked to speak at the Chag HaSmicha. That's one of the messages that he likes to give to the Musmachim. He did not speak at this past Chag HaSmicha, interestingly. I don't know, it just occurred to me that he didn't. But the past two, he did, and he gave the same message at the last two Chag HaSmichas that we had in Yeshiva University. And the message was that very often, when a rabbi behaves a certain way, the community members will assume that if the rabbi is behaving that way, then I can go one or two levels below that. So if a rabbi only observes the Ikar Adin, and he only does exactly what's required, so the community members will assume that they could do one or two levels below that, then they're going to fall short of the Ikar Adin. They're not going to do what they're actually required to do. So it is appropriate when people are in a certain position to take upon themselves certain chumras, but it has to be within range. It has to be within what makes sense for that person. So Mar Ukva was saying, it doesn't make sense for me. I can't observe my father's chumrah. So where does that leave us? Okay, we know Marukva's father waited 24 hours. Marukva waited from one su'udah to the other. How many su'udahs did he have? How long did he wait between su'udahs? So there is a range of shitos in the Rishonim that undoubtedly you've learned about. Tosos and Maseches Chulin writes that as long as one has a different meal and you recite a bracha achrona in between, that is good enough. Then Tosfos Maseches Chulin also writes that a cleansing of the mouth between the two would be good enough, and Mar Ukva's decision himself to wait till the next meal was also a churma. That's the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam and the Halachos Gedolos. We don't assume that way lahalacha. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Macholos Asuros, Perek Tes Halacha Chav Ches, and the Rashba writes in Chulin Daf Kofei, and the Rush writes in the 8th Perek of Maseches Chulin, that there should be ideally a 6-hour waiting period between eating fleishigs and eating milchigs. There is an interesting discussion that Rav Avadi Yosef Zichron Levracha has in Yabia Omer, Chelek Aleph, Yerodeya Simen Dalid, Ost Yud Gimel, where he suggests that maybe even those Rishonim who require waiting 6 hours maybe don't require waiting a full 6 hours. You know, you ever ask people, how long do you wait? So 6 hours, and some people will say, into the sixth, or five and change, or five and a half, or something like that. So Rav Avadya suggests, you know, the logic for suggesting that you don't need to wait the full 6 hours is that no one would know when 6 hours was up in earlier generations. You see, when we tell time, where do we look? We look down. We look at our, I was going to make the motion to look at my watch, but nowadays it's at a phone. We look at the phone, right? We're always looking down. It used to be in the olden days when people would want to tell the time, they would look up. They would look up at the sky, and that would depend on the time of year, whether it was a shorter day or longer day, so they could tell what percentage of the day is gone, but they can't tell how many 60-minute hours have passed. That was not something that was easy to estimate or easy to get with precision at all. They were forced to estimate by its very nature. Generally, the halachic definition of close to, of samuch, is generally assumed to be within a half hour of a particular time. The comment of the Gemara in Ksubas tells us that kol shiurei chachamim kenhu, that all of the shiurim, and the Gemara in second paragraph of Basu also, that all of the shiurim, all of the measurements that the chachamim gave us are precise and accurate and exact, and we're not allowed to assume that it's even off by a little bit, says Rav Yosef, that's when there's a precise shear given by the Chachamim. Over here, there is no real precise shear given by the Chachamim. The Rishonim estimate 6 hours from one meal to the next, but there isn't a precise shear. When the Chachamim give a precise shear, we have to trust that they know what they're talking about, and we can't assume that it doesn't make a difference if it's off by a little bit. Meaning, for example, the Gemara tells us in the second paragraph of Basra that if you have a bird that does not yet know how to fly, so the assumption is that the bird will hop away from its nest 50 amos, but it won't hop further away. That's too risky. Sometimes you have that with a child, right? You have a child that likes to run ahead of his parents, but there's only so far. If the child is too far ahead, then there is a point where they start to get scared, where they look back and they say, well, wait a second, I can only see figures. I'm not even sure if those are my parents. And then the tears come, and then the child gets scared. So the Gemara says you have a similar thing with a bird, that a bird will hop 50 amos away from its nest, but it doesn't go further than that. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yirmiyah asked the question, oh yeah, what if it has 1 foot past the 50 amma line and 1 foot within the 50 amma line? What would you say then? And the Gemara says, Alda afkul Rabbi Yirmiyah be Midrasha. They threw Rabbi Yirmiyah out of the base medrash for asking such a question. So what do you mean? I had many Talmidim that would ask such highly technical and specific questions like that. We generally said very nice things to them and made them feel like they just asked Rabbi Kiva Eger's Kasha. We didn't throw them out of the base medrash. So the reason that they threw him out of the base medrash was because he was questioning the shear of the Chachamim. He was saying, you mean to tell me that if it's 50 amos, then the bird's going to go, but the bird's not going to take one step past that? And the answer is yes. When the Chachamim give a shear, we have to respect that shear. We have to expect that measurement. However, over here, says Rav Avadya Yosef, the Chachamim never gave that measurement. And if the Chachamim didn't give that measurement, they never gave six hours as a measurement. That's something that the Rishonim estimated. And therefore, says Rav Avadya, it makes a lot of sense to say that it's somewhere around 6 hours and not exactly 6 hours. Furthermore, the Meiri in Magen Avos writes that one only has to wait 5 or 6 hours. The Rambam says one has to wait that's like 6 hours. Of course, I think it was Rabbi Bleich who pointed out that you know what else is like 6 hours? Not just 5 hours. 7 hours is like 6 hours also. But no one ever seems to err on that side. Everyone always seems to err on the other side. That 5 hours is like 6 hours. But Rav Avadya suggests that maybe there's room for leniency to go somewhere near 6 hours. But despite all that, Rav Avadya in the end is very hesitant to be mekel in practice, barring any very difficult circumstance. He's a little more willing to be mekel to estimate that if you're not sure, if you're not really sure, and you have a legitimate suffix, so then the Torah doesn't require us to do more than that. So in the end of the day, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that one is supposed to, like the Rambam, that one is supposed to wait a full 6 hours. The Rama recommends waiting 6 hours, but says says that even 1 hour would suffice. Where in the world did he pull 1 hour from? The Taz says he couldn't find any source in Rishonim for a 1 hour waiting period. He doesn't know where that came from. However, the Bir Agra points to a passage in the Zohar. The Zohar prohibits eating milk and meat during the same hour. So the assumption is when you have milk and meat during the same hour, that's considered to be eating them together. For those that are makel, I don't know if you're going to discuss this, but for those that are makel to have the coffee mate coffee creamers in their coffee after a fleishig meal, so some people I know are makel to do that, but only after an hour, because within an hour then it says if you're having it together with the fleishig meal, and that makes us a little uncomfortable. But at least an hour after the fleishig meal, I believe I heard that from our Rabbi Rav Willig Shlita, that he was comfortable after an hour to have the OUD coffee mate coffee creamer in the coffee after a fleishig meal. Nevertheless, even though the Ramah says really a single hour is halachically sufficient, the Shach writes that anybody who's infused with a Reyach HaTorah should wait a full 6 hours. There is some interesting discussion. Infused with a Reyach HaTorah, what exactly does that mean? The simple reading of the Shach implies that that's the recommended course of action for everybody, that everybody should wait 6 hours. Kafachaim says that anybody who's infused with a Reyach HaTorah is a reference to only really great people. It all depends on tone. Sometimes you can read Kol mi sheyeshbo reyach haTorah. Even if you just have a shmeck of Torah in you, you're going to wait 6 hours. Or it's Kol mi sheyeshbo reyach haTorah. If someone has the reyach haTorah, someone's imbued with this beautiful reyach haTorah, then they're going to wait 6 hours. So there is some discussion in the poskim as to what that means exactly. But we know Ashkenazic practice, like Sephardi practice, is to wait a full 6 hours unless you have a particular minhag otherwise, you know, a Dutch Jew or a German Jew who may have a specific minhag otherwise. But generally speaking, it's to wait 6 hours. The majority of Klal Yisrael is six or something like six, something in that ballpark. So where does that leave us with children? So it's a fascinating thing. Whenever you discuss children, the halachas of children, I just realized I'm 20 minutes into the shiur already. I haven't even gotten to children yet. I'm sorry. Whenever it comes to children, you always have to think of three different isurim as it relates to kashrus with children. One isur we have to think of is an isur called los achilim. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Yevamos Daf Kuf Yud Gimel Kuf Yud Dalet that there is an isur mida oraisa to feed non-kosher food to a child. That it's not only is there other requirements to make sure our children are doing the right thing, but specifically to feed Isser to a child, to provide them with Isser and feed Isser to a child is an Isser Mida Oraisa. So that's one thing you always have to think about. Is this a violation of that Isser Mida Oraisa? Then the second thing we need to think about is what's called Timtum Alev. Timtum Alev is the assumption that non-kosher food is not only an iser, but it has some sort of negative impact on our neshamos, and that negative impact on our neshamos has to be taken seriously. Because the food that we eat, we are what we eat, meaning the food that we eat helps to nourish, not only nourishes us, but makes us it goes into our blood and our flesh. It becomes who we are. Therefore, who we are cannot be affected by non-kosher food. It has to be, we have to be extremely careful about this concern of Timtum Alev. And Poskim took that concern of Timtum Alev very seriously throughout the generations. In fact, there is a tshuva in the Chasam Sofer about a young boy, or maybe it was a young woman, I don't remember, who had to be institutionalized. And the problem was that the institution the person was going to be put in didn't have a kosher food option. So the shaila was, right now the person's not a bar das anyway, so they have no chiyuv in mitzvos whatsoever. Can you put them in such an institution? So Chasam Sofer was very worried about the timtum alev element. He had nothing to be worried about in terms of the mitzvah or the iser element, because the person was not a bar das anyway. But he was deeply, deeply concerned about the timtum halev element of things. So Timtum Alev is a serious consideration. And then there's a third consideration when it comes to children, and that is just very simply the mitzvah of chinuch. So even though we have all of these three concerns in general, many of the poskim, including Rav Moshe Sturmbach, writes that this iser does not apply to feeding a child dairy after meat. While it's true that we're not allowed to eat dairy after meat, the food is not a cheftza of ma'achalos hasuros. You cannot call that dairy treif. It is not non-kosher food. The iser of los achilim is that you're not allowed to feed non-kosher food. To feed perfectly kosher food in a non-kosher context would not be a violation of los achilim. This could have major ramifications. Are you allowed to feed a child, a male child, outside of the sukkah on the Yom Tov of Sukkot? Are you allowed to give your children lunch on Yom Kippur? They're hungry. They need to eat. Everyone agrees that they're allowed to eat and they must eat. But if there's an issur of los achilim, then how can you give them something that's not kosher? So there are many ramifications to this concept, but certainly over here the poskim seem to assume that this is not at all a cheftz of ma'achalos hasuros. It is just asur as an additional geder offense around the actual prohibition in the Torah. Rav Vadia actually writes in a similar vein, also in Yabia Omer Chelek Aleph, that the issur to feed children non-kosher food only applies when the food is an iser cheftza. If the food is an iser gavra, it's not an object of macholos hasurots, it's just something that I am not allowed to eat, the child is not obligated to mitzvos, and therefore neither the meat nor the milk is an iser cheftza. Both are perfectly kosher. The iser of having them in proximity to each other is obviously only an iser gavra. And that might shed light on a very interesting halachic dilemma. What happens if a person had a fleshig lunch, and then, you know, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, whenever that time that you get drowsy, that, you know, your head starts to dip a little bit, and you feel like, okay, I need a coffee. And you totally forgot that it was a chicken salad you had for lunch today. It wasn't a tuna salad, it was a chicken salad you had for lunch today. So you make a coffee with milk in it. This has happened to me multiple times. You make a coffee with milk in it, and you say a bracha, Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Shehakol Nehiyeh Bedvaro. And then as you're about to take a sip, you realize, oh my gosh, I just had 2.5 hours ago, I just had lunch, and it was a fleshig lunch. Now, can I, not with the coffee maker creamer, with milk, with actual milk in the coffee, am I allowed to take a sip of this coffee? On the one hand, if I don't take a sip of the coffee, I violate bracha levatala. I just said a bracha that has it has nowhere to be chal, it has no access point to land. Yet on the other hand, if I do take a sip of this coffee, I'm going to be violating drinking milk within 6 hours of meat. I was once in a situation where I saw a chashev Talmud Chacham giving a shir, and his voice was getting, his throat was getting a little dry. So someone quickly brought him a cup of water, and he said, Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Shehakol Nehiyeh Bedvaro. And then he realized it was Asar B'Teves. It dawned on him before he took a sip that it was Asar B'Teves. A similar question. Can you take a sip in order not to violate Bracha Levatala? What does one do in that situation? So Rav Avadia Yosef thinks that this analysis is relevant for our case. Rav Avadia writes that even though the Isser of that in general, when you say a bracha on non-kosher food, it's a bracha levatala, and it's an invalid bracha. In this case, the bracha would be valid, because it's not a non-kosher food. It's on kosher food at a non-kosher time. And a bracha on kosher food at a non-kosher time is a valid bracha. And therefore, he says, the person should place the food in his mouth in order to avoid the violation of bracha levatala. In fact, the Kaf HaChaim says that he had this exact experience, and he allowed himself to eat a small amount of the dairy food in order to avoid wasting his bracha. That is a viable shita in poskim of what to do. Of what to do in that situation to make sure that that the person is not in violation of bracha levatala to put a little bit in their mouth. So anyway, as far as lo sachilim, it seems that there is not going to be an iser. It goes without saying there's also no iser of timtum halev, because timtum halev is only when there's non-kosher food that is being ingested. I remember a friend of mine telling me that as a child, his parents were not so religious, but they wanted to raise him religious, and they sent him to yeshivas, and his mother was connected to Chabad, and she was very, very careful about the kashrus of her children, of what her children put in their mouth. She was extremely careful, so much so he said that he opened up a box of cereal once, and it used to be in the old days that in the box of cereal you get a toy sometimes, or sometimes even a candy, and it could be a non-kosher candy. I don't know how hashkachas used to allow this. I can't imagine any hashkacha agency worth anything would ever allow the cereal company to put a non-kosher candy, even wrapped in plastic, in the box. But be that as it may, that's what happened. It was like a non-kosher candy in the box, and he took it out and he pulled it out of the wrapping, and he was about to eat it, and his mother saw what he was about to do. She came running from across the kitchen. She grabbed the candy and stuck it in her own mouth. In a great act of Mesiras Nefesh to save him from eating non-kosher food. And he said it made such an impression on him that she wanted to protect his neshama. She figured she's a goner already, which is not the right thing to figure, but she figured that to anything, to take away the access to the non-kosher food. Now that person is a very, very chashuv mechanech in a very important Jewish institution. So it worked. Whatever the mother did, it worked. But be that as it may, it seems that the entire issue when it comes to children waiting between milchigs and fleishigs is an issue of chinuch. It's not timtum alev, it's not los achilim, it's simply an issue of chinuch. And it's interesting that we don't really have discussion, as far as I know, we don't really have discussion in poskim about what the proper age of chinuch for this is, up until very recent times, up until the last generation or two, to determine how long a child should wait and at what age the child should have to wait. I don't know why we don't have much earlier conversation about it, but it seems that we don't. You know, people often assume that there's a single age for chinuch, that there's an age where a child just ages into everything, that all the mitzvahs, he's obligated in chinuch at that point in time. The Gemara is pretty explicit that that's not the case, that there's no single age for chinuch. The Gemara tells us that at what age does a child take a lulav? Katan, when he's yodeil l'naneya, when he knows how to shake the lulav, how to do all the na'anuin. At what age does a child put on tefillin? When he's yodea lishmar tefillah, when he knows how to guard his tefillin, meaning to wear them properly and not to mistreat them and not to have any inappropriate bodily functions while he's wearing his tefillin, when he knows how to be shomer his tefillin properly. Obviously, that should happen before bar mitzvah. If he's already at bar mitzvah, he should have gotten there already. He should have gotten to that point. I think Rav Shechter told us once that he started wearing tefillin when he was 11, which is highly unusual, but he said his father figured that he knows how to be shomer tefillah, he knows how to guard the tefillin properly, so he started wearing tefillin at that age. One of my children started wearing tefillin when he was 2, but it was the fake plastic ones. We didn't trust him with the real thing until much, much later. But generally speaking, the age of chinuch for a given mitzvah is when you're able to do that mitzvah, as Brisker Rav points out, not just able to minimally do the mitzvah, but able to do that mitzvah Bishle Musa, to do the mitzvah in the best possible way. So where does that leave us? At what age should a child be waiting in between milchigs and fleishigs? So Rav Shmuel Vosner, Zichron Levracha, gave general guidelines without specifically identifying an exact age for each of the categories, and one has to know their own children and which category they fit in. Essentially, he puts it into two categories. There are young children and there are older children. He says when you're dealing with very young children, there's no minimum waiting period. Young children are considered to have the status of a chola, and the halacha of a chola is that you're allowed to eat a milchig meal after a meat meal based on the shita of Tosfos. So since a chola can do that, and every young child, certainly 6 and under, has the status of a chola, so chola shein bo sakana, so you could certainly do that for a chola. When dealing with older children, then it becomes a little more complex, says Rav Vosner. Rav Vosner is makil to a degree with children who are what he calls a little bit grown up, and he quotes a sheet of the Meiri that since the basis in the Gemara for waiting is only until the next meal, and children tend to eat more frequently than adults, it would be mutter for a child to have a milk meal shortly after a chicken meal, because children are always snacking, they're always having more food. The Meiri was not willing to allow a milk meal after a true meat meal, but after a chicken meal he was willing to be makil, because chicken is only basar on a derabanan level. Rav Vosner says, well, wait a second, if the Meiri, who held that the halacha requires waiting 6 hours, and it's not just a minhag, it's a halacha, is willing to be makel with a child, then certainly Ashkenazi Jews, who hold that the halacha is really only 1 hour, and that the 6 hour waiting period is a chumrah, a minhag, so certainly we could be makel and allow children to have a milchig meal after only 1 hour following a chicken meal. That's Rav Vazner's logic. Rav Moshe Stern, who was the Debrecen Rav, originally from Debrecen and then was a Rav in Borough Park for many years, was a Chashuv Talmid Chacham, wrote tshuvas called Be'er Moshe. So Rav Moshe Stern divides children into 4 different age groups, and he doesn't explain the exact reasoning, nor does he give any sources for this. He was a person who valued tradition and his own family traditions a great deal, Rav Moshe Stern. I don't know how much many of you know about him. We don't talk about him so much in our yeshiva. He was not the biggest fan of our yeshiva, to be honest. He has a tshuva about it. But he was a Hungarian posek who was very, very loyal to his Hungarian background. In fact, he even has one funny tshuva where someone asked about wearing a reuter bendel, wearing a red string to ward off the Ayin Hara. So he quoted exactly what you'd expect. He quoted the Tosefta, Masechta Shabbos, that says that it's an Isser of Darkei Amori to wear a red string to ward off the Ayin Hara. And then he says, yes, I know that's what the Tosefta says, but my Bubby was the frumest lady I've ever met, and she insisted that the grandchildren wear a right to Bendel, and if my Bubby said so, that's the Pesach Achron, and that's what we listen to. So this is a person who is very, very much connected to his traditions. You imagine that a lot of this came from his traditions. He doesn't really provide sources for it, but he divides children into 4 categories. He writes that a child under the age of 3, no waiting period whatsoever. Just clean out his mouth from meat residue, and that would be good enough. In fact, there's a wonderful sefer called B'mechitzas Rabbeinu, with the Hanhagos of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. It's similar to those who are familiar to Nefesh HaRav that Rav Shechter wrote about Rav Soloveitchik, except it wasn't written, the one about Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky wasn't written by Rav Shechter, it was written by another Talmid Chacham, but there's something unique about the way Rav Shechter writes, but it's also a very nice sefer. B'mechitzas Rabbeinu on page Pehe, he also says that until the child is 3 years old, don't bother with any waiting period whatsoever. Then the Debrecen Rav writes, a 3-year-old child should be made to wait 1 hour, and you gradually increase his waiting period until he turns 6 years old. Requiring a 3-year-old to wait 1 hour is somewhat puzzling. After all, if the issue is one of chinuch, it would seem that is well below the age of chinuch. And Rav Shechter pointed out to me that he found this puzzling, but he suggested that maybe if you assume, like the Shita of the Gra, that the Zohar says that eating milk and meat within an hour of each other is the same as eating milk and meat together, so maybe we would treat that as if it's a cheftza of ma'achalos asuros, and therefore subject to the prohibition of los achilin. So maybe that would, but if that were the case, l'chora it should apply even if the child's under 3 years old. Then the Debrecen Rav writes that a 6-year-old child should be encouraged to wait the full 6 hours, but not demanded. If he's unable to do so, let him wait 3 hours after eating meat, because a 6-year-old child may, a 6-7-year-old child, 8-year-old child may be very unhappy about that, and you certainly don't want the child to have a negative feeling toward Yiddishkeit in general. Obviously, we could use that as an excuse for letting kids do anything, and we should not use that as an excuse for letting children do anything. Children do need rules, and they do need guidance, and they do need to be told what they can and cannot do, but nevertheless, it's within reason. So if a 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old child is not ready to wait 6 hours, says the Debrecen Rav, it should not be forced upon them. It's not something that we should be insisting upon. But the Debrecen Rav writes, once a child reaches the age of 9, then the full 6-hour waiting period should be strictly enforced. In fact, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says the same thing, that at the age of 9, a child should be waiting whatever his family custom requires. However, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky did not think that 6, that the age of 6 was a major turning point. The sense that you get from reading the contemporary poskim and from the absence of any discussion in earlier poskim is that these are not ironclad halachos. That certainly by the time the child is an adult, you have to ease him into the life as an adult. By the time the child is bar or bat mitzvah, they have to be able to observe the halacha properly and fully, and we have to figure out a game plan to get them there. That's the entire mitzvah of chinuch. The mitzvah of chinuch, you know, is a mitzvah midrabanan, but as Rav Asher Weiss points out, it's clearly a ratzon ha-Torah midaraisa, meaning clearly the Torah intends on it, because what do we expect? That a child is going to be eating cheeseburgers his whole life, and he's going to be mechal shabbos and everything, and then, oh, happy bar mitzvah, happy birthday, now today's, you know, Yankel's bar mitzvah, so now all of a sudden, everything all at once. That's crazy. That's insanity. You can't expect a child to do that. Obviously, it's going to have to be gradual, and this is some of these details are the direction of Poskim in terms of how to best implement that gradual increase in observance. But the ikar is that we should keep our children pure. We should keep them, obviously eating only kosher food always, and making sure that we're training them properly to live a fully observant life of Torah mitzvos, and in that way, they'll be able to bring us all a tremendous amount of nachas. So I thank you all for coming to learn with me this evening. I thank Rav Steinmetz so much for inviting me. I wish everyone a wonderful night.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Leibowitz, as always.